riding along on a pushback, honey, when I noticed you. Riding downtown in a hurry, honey, down South Avenue, you look so pretty as you were riding along. You look so pretty.
Hello and welcome to the April 2014 episode of the Bike Portland podcast about bikes and low-car life in PDX, taped here at Sprocket Studios. I'm Lillian Kerbake.
I'm Jonathan Maas.
And I'm Michael Anderson. Each month, the three of us go in-depth on a subject that matters to Portlanders who get around without a car.
And we do it in the time it takes the average Portlander to get to work.
The days are getting gloriously long, so we're lightening up the podcast this month.
And we'll be talking about something every bike user makes decisions about.
Whether they want to or not.
It's something that some people think don't exist.
Something that some people have very strong opinions about.
Something that most of us just sort of bumble through.
We're talking about bike fashion.
From high heels to yellow lycra.
And the reasons we choose to express ourselves in fabric, plastic, and metal.
Stay tuned. Enjoy listening. All right. Well, this month we have a special guest, Megan Sinnott, who's Miss Do It All Well at Nutcase Helmets, right? Is that your official title?
We don't have our official titles on the website, so that was one that I was coined with.
Megan, you can find at almost every bike event at Portland and has had a hand in all the events you know well, Filmed by Bike, World Naked Bike Ride, Tweed Ride. Longtime bike fun volunteer and also a very fashionable bike riding woman. We're very excited to have you on, Megan.
Yeah. Thank you, Lily. Great to be here, everybody.
Thanks a lot. We want to talk about why bike fashion matters first. So what is it? Why is this something worth devoting a half hour to? What is the intersection between what some would call the trivial subject of fashion and the like important subject of transportation? What do these things have to do with each other, and why is it interesting?
Well, what I've noticed since the urban biking boom really got going, I think around 2006, 2007, is that just the level of conversation about fashion has risen in proportion with that increase in urban cycling. So it's just a part of the landscape now, and whether you're talking in advocacy circles, on the internet, on blogs, on social media, I mean, the industry, everybody is kind of like, as they're addressing the newness of urban biking is also this newness of this topic of, oh, what are people wearing in fashion? So you really can't avoid it when you're sort of steeped in the spheres that we're all involved in.
People care what you wear. It's a first impression thing.
Right.
If I may say, fashion as a cyclist is important to me because I use fashion as a form of advocacy. And I find that, if I may say so myself, have changed people's perspectives about cycling and about fashion and about their ability to get on a bike by simply arriving to places dressed in a dress or a skirt and heels, yeah, and having strangers be shocked and say, "Did you bike here in that outfit?" And I say, "Yes, I wear outfits like this every day." Yeah. And I don't talk about the biking.
Right.
I talk about my outfit. Why, thank you so much. I do feel like I look wonderful myself. But no, the importance isn't that I was biking. It's that, heck yeah, I look good in my heels today.
Right.
Oh yes. And then that vehicle, that is a bicycle. Yeah.
So actually,
it is a form of advocacy.
In the interest of full disclosure / full disclother, we should,
oh.
I know, it's so bad. I feel like we should all give, for our radio listeners, an idea of what we generally wear on a bike.
Or what we're wearing
we
today.
We know that Megan looks fabulous today, but our listeners don't. So I feel like we should go around and say what we generally wear.
That's perfect. Good idea.
Michael, I'm looking at you.
Okay. I almost always wear the same thing. I own one pair of Levi's jeans. I wear it almost every day. I wear a button-down shirt, no wrinkle-free shirt, and I wear a sport jacket from Macy's, and I wear sneakers. And
reporter style.
Right. Yeah. Well, actually, it was, so when I was a newspaper reporter, I thought that I didn't care about fashion, and I wore terrible clothing all the time. Only when I started, when I left the newspaper, I didn't have that status sort of imposed on me from my job, that I realized people reacted very, very differently to me based on what I was wearing. And so, like, it really opened up my sense of, like, oh, this is a very important choice. And, like, I had not taken any of this seriously at all before, and I think I take it very seriously now. It's really a big part of what people know about me, is that I always ride my bike in a sport jacket and jeans.
I remember a while ago we talked about, we're both, Michael and I are both from Ohio, and one of the things I said is that you wear jeans and a sport jacket, and I feel like in the Northwest people notice the sport jacket.
That's right.
But in the Midwest everybody notices the jeans.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Go ahead, Lily, you're next.
Because I wear many different hats job-wise, I actually commute to my morning job, which is very physical and involves moving bikes around in lots of grease, wearing black bomb-proof jeans and my uniform shirt for the bike valet. So what I wear at that job is completely unglamorous, and I mostly look like a 12-year-old boy when I'm at work there because they don't have stuff in my size for the uniforms. But when I go to my other jobs, I tend to mostly bike in heels, in stockings, in full crinolines, sometimes bloomers, and my winter jacket is not a, you know, waterproof, yellow, bright yellow cycling jacket that are so ubiquitous around Portland. My winter jacket is a full skirt wool Lolita jacket in, you know, bright purple and blue that fits around my large crinolines that I tend to wear. So, and I get more compliments on that jacket, and it's the best cycling jacket I've ever had because it covers my knees in the winter, so it keeps them warm and dry.
Mm-hmm.
This is Megan. And, in the winter, I wear skirts and tights, and in the summer, I wear skirts and some sort of stretchy shorts underneath. I wouldn't say bike shorts, because there's nothing padded or crazy in there. It's just stretchy shorts underneath my skirt. Dresses, skirts, and on the rare occasion that I do wear pants, almost always somebody comments, "Megan, I've never seen you wear jeans before." But I do, in fact, own about 5 pairs of jeans. Yeah, I find that in the winter, I tend to wear a lot of dark colors, mostly black, as Lily mentioned, and that's so that people can't see all the bike grease, mud, and other things on myself. Or when I'm wet. If I'm wearing black, people can't tell how wet I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, good tip.
That's what knee-high boots are for, though. I feel like you got the long coat and the knee-high boots, and you're set in the winter. That's the...
Well, my usual outfit is kind of similar to Michael's. I mean, I wear a sport coat a lot, a nice dress shirt. I mean, I basically look just like anybody, sort of business casual, any office jockey for the most part. I'm into these like bike specific pants. That's something that as of a couple years ago, I just think are super awesome, and they're nothing special. They look like regular pants, the good ones. They just have, you know, like reinforced, you know, crotch area and some maybe reflective bits or something like on the cuff, and they're stretchy, which is super awesome. And I wear, you know, I try to wear a nice pair of shoes, but basically my overriding principle is that I do a lot of work on my bike, obviously, and I'm riding around town, and I want to roll up to like a group of people at an event or something, or city hall or a meeting, and I don't want people to know that I'm the bike guy. Mm-hmm. I just want to blend in.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't want any cues that I got there on a bike, because that may, like as a reporter, that may change how they talk to me, if they talk to me, whatever preconceived notions they might have. So that's one of the reasons why I dress like I dress. But so yeah, pretty standard business attire. And in this, I forgot what I wore in the summer. It's been so long. I do not know.
Time to start thinking about it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it.
I started pulling out the sundresses yesterday. I was like, oh, it's time to open the box. And I was like, oh, I forgot how nice it is to dress like in a sundress and ride my bike and have the wind blowing.
If I may, real quick, I'd like to mention the outfit I'm wearing right now.
Yes.
I'm wearing a dress that I had actually found at the Goodwill bins, where clothing is by the pound, and it didn't fit me. So I had a friend make me another one, which is pretty rare. I hardly ever buy new clothes, but pretty spectacular when you have a friend who can recreate clothes you found so that they fit you now. So I'm wearing a wool blend dress that is just long enough that it looks good on me, and also I don't flash people every time I step over my quote-unquote man bike. I'm also wearing tights for two reasons. One, maybe this is too much information for our listeners, but I don't shave my legs. So it's only appropriate, I think, sometimes that I cover up these lovely hairy legs. But I'm really wearing tights because it's covering up the bruises on my legs. And as a cyclist, I find that it can be distracting if I go and hang out with people who aren't regular bikers and they see my bruised legs and they think that, you know, I'm clumsy in a bad relationship or, I don't know, a mountain biker or something. But no, I just have my pedal hit my leg sometimes. So tights covering bruises. And then I'm accidentally wearing cycling specific high heels.
Oh, I've seen these before. Which, yeah. They're like reinforced on the part that the pedal hits.
Yeah. So they're
sturdy. Don't look like cycling heels, by the way.
No, I got them at a store. I had no idea they were biking shoes. And I got them because they were sturdy. The heel is not covered with fabric so that it doesn't get scuffed by my pedal. They also have little straps on the top so that no matter what crazy maneuvers I'm pulling, my shoe doesn't come flying off my foot, because I've certainly had that happen before. And then what I noticed finally, which kind of clued me into the fact that these were bike shoes, is that there's a tiny itty bitty little tab of reflective tape on the back. And so then I flipped them over and the sticker on the bottom of the shoe said, "Great for cycling." And I was like, curses, they're on to me. But you two, dear listeners, can add your own strip of reflective tape to your shoes. And most people won't notice and it looks great.
Well, one of the key things I've noticed about heels for what makes them
which
cycling.
Which Lily is also wearing. Yeah. She took off her other shoes as she came in and put on these cat decorated heels.
I actually have three pairs of shoes with me right now because I have the shoes I wear at work for running around 2 miles while I'm at work. And then I have my cycling shoes, which I wear when I'm going certain amount of distances. And then I have my bike heels. And I sort of decide how far I'm biking if I'm going to switch into my bike shoes. No, I'm wearing houndstooth cat heels right now. And I will definitely be wearing these on my bike to my next job. But the what I've really noticed for holding up for heels is that they need to be rubber soles and they need to be reinforced like right underneath, because otherwise my pedals just kill the soles of my shoes. And I actually destroyed a pair of boots in about 2 months, like boots, not heels, just from, because I wear my pedals are convertible, so they're both clipless and flat pedals, and because of that they're actually really tough on non-clipless shoes.
So. All right, sorry gentlemen, one last thing about heels. When people gawk at the fact that I'm wearing these shoes and they say, "My goodness, how are you able to bike in those heels?" What I say, and again this is a form of advocacy for me, is it's actually easier for me to bike in heels than it is for me to walk in them.
It's true for me too.
And I think that is really key.
Also, really, really tall heels are even easier to set, like really insane dancer size heels, like 5 inches or plus, which I tend to wear during pedal palooza rides. It's really easy because you can put your pedal in between the platform in the front and the heel in the back and actually lift up like you have a clipless pedal with the rear heel. That's how I rode like all of Bowie versus Prince. I led 2 summers ago on a 8 mile per hour maximum heavy trike, but I was wearing 5 inch platform heels, so it was really easy actually to stick my pedal in there. Also, when you're petite like me, it can be hard to put your foot down at stoplights on some bikes, and it's really nice in heels. It's a little easier to put your foot down.
So when we put this podcast on the front page of Bike Portland in a week or so, I'm going to be including pictures of Lillian wearing those heeled boots on that trike on that Prince ride. I happen to have a portrait of that, so we will be doing that. And hey, since we're sort of doing some bike fashion confessionals, one thing I find really fascinating is that, so every Monday my routine is to sort of ghost ride my bike, another bike on my hand, down to my office with me, and it's like my go fast bike, my road bike, and I keep that in my office all week so that I can leave and do lunch rides during the day. So several times a week I do that. And the other thing I bring with me every Monday down to the office is a bag full of Lycra and a bunch of cycling clothing with pads and all sorts of things on them that make me look, to some people, probably, you know, like a funny roadie. So that's pretty interesting to like go from, you know, wearing my sport coat and my nice shoes in the morning, and then a couple hours later I'm out there on Lycra, and just to kind of feel how that feels to me and how I know the perceptions that people are having of me are just markedly different in those two, you know, in those two outfits.
Can you is the perceptions that people have of you, is it more in the way they interact with you in person or the way they interact with you on the roadway? Like, do you notice a significant difference in the way people treat you on the roadway between the two outfits?
I think not a ton. It's probably mostly in my head. But I do think that, I think there's been some studies about this, but I mean, if people, the other road users see someone in Lycra, they sort of expect a higher level of aptitude, let's say. Mm-hmm. And I think they probably dismiss it more quickly in a way, because, you know, in America, we're still, the idea of people wearing normal, nice clothes on bikes is still sort of new. I think people actually, most of the road users in Portland probably look at me longer when I'm wearing my nicer clothes mm-hmm. than I do with my Lycra,
really?
Because
for sure.
Lycra is kind of a box that most Americans put cycling in, you know, Lance Armstrong and, you know, all that kind of stuff, to some degree, you know, and when you get out to rural roads, it's like a different story, but, yeah, so it's an interesting mix.
I definitely feel like people treat me much nicer when I got the jacket on than when they don't. Which is sort of sinister in that, like, you know, by communicating wealth, I am achieving respect. And you can see that in the fatality rates for people of color are higher because people do not treat them in general with the same respect, which is terrifying and terrible, but
right,
the
and
way
the only,
the world.
And the reason they're, you know, having those cues about whether they should respect that person or not are based entirely on, for the most part, what that person's wearing.
Right.
You know,
I'm not sure. And race,
and race,
bike,
right.
and speed, and all sorts of things. All sorts of things that are completely unfair about whether or not
exactly.
you decide you're willing to kill a person. Right. Right.
But it brings up, I think, one of the most interesting things about the idea of what you wear when you ride is that you're such a billboard.
Right. And you can control that part of it.
Yeah. And for some people, they sort of embrace the fact that they're a billboard in many different ways. So it manifests in different ways for different people. But unlike any other mode, you're so just on display. You know, when you're walking, you're not on the road. You're kind of off to the side. And it's, I think the movement of walking itself is not as interesting to the eye as cycling, let's say. And now if you're in a bus, nobody can see your clothing. If you're in your car, nobody can see your clothing. So you have these bikes, which are, again, increasingly showing up on these urban roads. And it's like people can just sit there and stare at you. And so that just brings up a lot of interesting things.
Or interact with you. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many drivers can say that while commuting to work, they have somebody yell after them, great dress.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or I love your bike. Cute helmet.
Well, can you guys speak at all to the negative side of that? I mean, that people,
well,
the catcalling, is that an issue?
Catcalling only happens for me in the summer months. I get old ladies like, I love your jacket in the winter. And Timbers fans that are like, nice scarf. But I actually just had my first catcall of the season. I don't know. This is a sign that spring is back. Biking down to the Timbers game, I was, you know, wearing my Timbers dress and my scarf, and I had my Timbers flag on my bike, and I got catcalled in this way where it wasn't aggressively at me. It was two men crossing in the crosswalk while I was stopped at a light, talking very loudly about me as though I was not 2 feet from them. And it was this weird idea of like, okay, well, they're appreciating me as traffic to the point where they seem to think I'm not listening while they're talking about like me as an object and what I'm wearing. But it's interesting. I feel like in Portland, I don't get a ton of it. I get more compliments than I do like aggressive catcalls based on my outfits. But there's this vulnerability that all cyclists feel. We're vulnerable roadway users, right? That vulnerability is, I think, there's an extra layer to it when you're a woman dressed in a way that people have decided it's appropriate that they have some sort of permission to comment on what you're wearing because what you're wearing is somehow inviting them to comment on what you're wearing.
I've only been catcalled less than half a dozen times in the last year, and five of those times were actually friends of mine. kind of embarrassingly so that, you know, somebody's yelling like, woo-woo, ow! Looking good. And I was ignoring until somebody finally said behind me, hey, nice gams. And I was like, who says gams except for my grandpa? And I turn around, he's like, I was wondering when you were gonna notice it was somebody, it was me calling it. Well, you know, normally I just ignore it. But the one time that it was an honest cat call, I rolled into the warehouse where the cat call came from and I addressed it. And I hope that they don't catcall again to anybody who bikes. So we're very lucky in Portland, Oregon. I get catcalled wearing, you know, poofy jackets and snow pants in Alaska. People can't even see me. And here you can be wearing a skirt, heels.
Wait. And that's because you're on a bicycle and a female?
Just because you are moving in Alaska, and I think you're catcall worthy in certain parts of town.
Yeah. So that's actually something I want to ask about as well, is that does being on a bike and being sort of mobile and relatively sort of disconnected in the way Lily describes, or possibly safe, that you could have pulled out of that warehouse quickly, Megan, just like being able to not have to interact with people unless they're also on a bike or possibly really crazy and in a car, does that make it safer for a woman to be visible, I guess?
There's certainly in situations where I don't feel safe walking, which is pretty rare in Portland, but in general, like, yeah, I would rather be on a bike than walking in any situation where I feel like it could be potentially unsafe. And I rarely feel unsafe. Portland is a very safe town.
Yeah, I agree, right.
But, you know, especially when I travel, yeah, no, I definitely prefer having this type of mobility that is greater than my running ability. So,
well, now that we've delved somehow very deep into urban feminism.
Yeah, right.
The basis of all bike fashion discussions, I think. So
good point. Well, do you want to talk more about sort of Lycra sporty clothing? Anything else on that line?
I wanted to touch base on this discussion about Lycra because for me, I do not own any bicycling specific gear, and I have absolutely zero issue with anybody who owns even the slightest bit of bike gear. I have a rain jacket. It's not a bike rain jacket. I think that people who wear brighter jackets with reflective tape are likely more intelligent than I am because they are much more visible than I am in my slick zip-up asymmetrical jacket that I think I look fabulous in. But it is not as safe. There's reasons people wear Lycra. The way that it wicks moisture from their body, the fact that they can go faster in it. There's a ton of reasons that people wear Lycra. It's just not for me. I don't own any bike-specific gear. I don't invest in stuff that I only can use for one purpose. You can't pop off your bike wearing Lycra and go shopping in the grocery store without having everybody stare at you. I can pop off my bike wearing my dress and my heels and not have everybody stare at me in the store, if you can believe it.
as someone who I feel like I toe both lines, like I own clipless bike shoes. I do own a jersey. It's wool. It's a shift jersey. I'm not sure it totally fits in the jersey category, but I own Lycra bike shorts that are padded specifically because I go on a lot of long distance rides and I find them useful for that. Like when I'm doing a century, I really like to have padded bike shorts, but I also very strongly don't like to look like a cyclist in quotes on the roadway. And the shorts that I have are lace lined and they're meant for wearing under a skirt. And I never go cycle touring without wearing a skirt like over my, and a dress. And I don't wear like traditional cycling clothes when I'm out touring, mostly because I think a lot of really awesome women toured around the world at the turn of the century on their way less awesome than my bikes in non-technical cycling gear did a pretty decent job. So I feel like I can do it, but I like having those padded shorts, but also I really like getting them off at the end of the day.
Yeah. It's hard to relate to other people who aren't in Lycra when you're in Lycra.
Right.
And that's a thing. I mean, I went to a seminar recently, an event by that Bike Packing 101 event, that there's a lot of really cool movement locally to, you know, get more people out adventuring on their bike and spending a night out in the woods on their bike and doing the bike packing. And one of the main proponents and promoters of it, a guy named Donnie Kolb from Velo Dirt, pieces of advice about what to wear when you're out on these rural roads and logging roads and gravel roads is that even if you do wear tight bike shorts, wear baggy shorts over them.
Yeah.
Because when you come in contact with people in these rural towns, they're way less likely to want to strike a conversation with you or just to be cool about stuff if you're in tight shorts. Mm-hmm. And it may seem baseless, it may seem silly, like, you know, it's judgmental, but humans are humans. So I think that's a piece of it.
Does anybody have a chain guard? I think this is important, like talking about the bike side of the bike fashion thing. Does anybody here have a chain guard?
No. I definitely do. I think it should be like a standard piece of equipment on all bikes sold in America, you know, for city bikes. I just think, you know, it's all about simplicity. Hop on, do your ride, hop off, go to your meeting. And without a chain guard, it's like, what are you stuffing your pant leg in your sock? You're putting a strap on your leg. You're rolling up all these things are marking you as a bike rider. And again, like I said earlier, it's like, I'd prefer not to do any of that stuff. So I want it to be super easy.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. I feel I don't need a chain guard. I've got a cheap bike and it works fine.
Have you ever got your pants though, like caught in it? No,
not since elementary school.
What do you say, Michael? Burn.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I mean, good for you. It's something that can definitely happen. I mean, so
yeah, I'm sure.
I don't have a chain guard either, mostly because they're actually really hard to aftermarket put on most bikes in the United States. You can't really get a chain guard. So chain guard covers your chain so that you don't get grease on your pants is the idea. Bike I had in Germany was the only bike in my life I've ever had a chain guard, and it had a full chain case to the point where you couldn't even lube your chain other than through a tiny little hole that you could like put a syringe in and lube your chain. Also, you didn't really need to lube your chain because it was so protected, it didn't get dirt on it or anything. But it came standard with my like bike in Germany because that's just what city bikes come with there. Mm-hmm. And it was a nice feeling, but as someone who wears skirts, I'm not typically in the things get eaten by my chain category. Mm-hmm. The only thing I really worry about is getting grease on my tights,
ooh,
which can be a problem if your bike leans on you.
Right.
So I have, unfortunately, multiple bikes. My sportier city bike does not have a chain guard. My cargo bike does not have a chain guard. But I did have a bicycle finally made for myself that was my dream mobile. And it does have a chain guard on it. And it's spectacular. I don't have to think about my outfit at all when I get on my bike. And that's just one factor, but highly recommend the chain guard.
Sadly, we can recommend it, but you probably can't get it on your bike if you have a traditional road bike or hybrid.
Yeah, they're hard to fit aftermarket-wise.
Yeah, really hard to fit, unfortunately.
So Lillian mentioned her old German bike. So I think the European influence is kind of a big thing that weighs in my mind about when I think about fashion, because I spent several weeks in Copenhagen and Amsterdam last year. And yeah, I mean, those people know how to dress on a bike. I mean, there's some seriously amazing fashion going on there. New York City too, actually. But that's just New York City thing. But you know, but in Europe, it's a good example. It's because if you look at how civilized, like their facilities are very civilized, their bicycles are all upright and they all have chain cases and they're all step throughs, you know, for the women especially. So, and to a person almost, they all wear their suits, their heels, their nice, you know, office clothes. But like I was telling Michael the other day, I had a funny thing happen in Copenhagen, right in downtown, where there were some dudes riding Lycra on their bikes, you know, wearing Lycra, going super fast on the cycle track, and almost ran into all the, like the big platoon of people riding, you know, to and from work or whatever.
With like horizontal racing bikes?
Yeah, they were fully drop bar racing. I mean, these guys were like headed out to the cycle superhighway to go for a ride.
Yeah.
And anyways, there was like yelling that happened because the other riders didn't move fast enough. And it was just this amazing interaction. So it happens over there too.
Yeah.
And something, I mean, in Germany, even the mail's delivered by like cargo bike around the city. And something that I noticed is despite having all of these people who are literally professional cyclists, like all of these postal carriers that through the snow, through the negative 20 degree weather in Berlin, ride these giant yellow cargo bikes out to deliver the mail. And even they don't wear what we would, like Americans would consider traditional cycling gear. They wear like what looks a lot like a postal uniform here. So I always thought that was very interesting that even through the snow and everything, people whose day every day is just cycling around still don't wear cycling gear.
So I'm strong enough against buying cycling gear that I don't even really have a cycling specific bag, which is quite the lovely industry here in Portland, Oregon. There's many fantastic bag makers, and I enjoy them in maybe a torrential downpour to have a specific cycling bag, but for the most part I carry a regular, everyday, massive purse. And I don't like keeping it on my back because it's bad for my shoulders and my back. But I have a basket on the front. Mm-hmm. And again, it's just as simple as, you know, getting yourself a chain guard and getting yourself a basket. And with those two things, you truly can wear anything. Having a basket on the front makes it a lot easier for me to bike around in the summertime because then I don't show up with a sweaty back everywhere. So there are a few things that you can do to your bike so that you can wear your average everyday clothes on a bike. And I really encourage people to look into those options. But basket, life changer.
Mm-hmm. So are panniers, I would say, for dudes, if nothing else. Because, you know, I don't typically carry a bag of any kind, but when I'm on my bike, I always put stuff in the pannier, and that's the all-purpose, sweat-free transportation everywhere.
I always say that the day I switched from a messenger bag to a backpack changed my life, and the day I changed from a backpack to a pannier changed my life, and then the day I changed from a pannier to an extra cycle changed my life as well.
So none of us sitting around this room now put anything on our backs. So we don't do backpacks.
Oh, absolutely not. God, no. Never.
No. Yeah. I own a backpack, and if it's like, I use it if my basket is full and if I have a cargo bike, then the front is full and everything is like strapped onto all of every single possible part of my bike is full, then I'll put the backpack on.
But normally no backpack, because I still think maybe it's half of the people still wear backpacks that I notice when I'm when I'm riding.
I think it has to do with your shoulder, your ability to hoof stuff on your shoulder. I think a lot of it boils down to also that panniers are kind of pricey in this town. Like, it's difficult to get a cheap pair of panniers, and if you're just starting out cycling, you know, you'd rather spend money on other parts of your bike or things that you consider essential for safety rather than comfort.
For $40 you can get yourself a massive front basket that will hold any bag you already have. There's no need to have panniers so that when you walk into a place, everybody knows that you biked there.
Well put.
My panniers
Michael.
my panniers is one of the convertible backpack ones, and I only use the backpack from where I'm going to my bike and vice versa, and I really like it. Also because you have to pay attention to know that it's a cycle bag versus like a bright yellow Ortlieb, which, you know, all purpose, but definitely like even when you're at the bar, it's like, oh, you biked here, huh?
Those are, if I had to pick one sort of standard issue Portland thing, it's probably one of those bright Ortlieb bags. I mean, I notice all the bike stuff I see every day, I'm constantly noticing. I mean, it's kind of like my job, but it's always the yellow and the orange Ortlieb bags with the bright jacket. I've been thinking about this recently as we've been talking about fashion. It's like, if I had to pick one sort of standard issue uniform for Portland bike commuters, that would be it. That's the dominant thing.
Well, you know, the Smart Trips program is focusing on people that move here now. So maybe they're just secretly, everybody that moves here, issuing an Ortlieb.
No, you know who's doing that is my mom. Is issuing me high visibility clothing every opportunity. She will send me a new kind of that. Hi, Mom.
Yeah, we didn't even touch on the high visibility clothing aspect, but I think maybe it's because none of us in this room really go that route. I mean, in terms of like the big road safety vests.
I wear everything my mom sends me all the time.
Just for the record.
Yes.
Michael's mom. Sorry.
I do always have a bike light on the back, which is actually not required in the state of Oregon.
You're only required to have a rear red reflector.
Right. But I do always have a red bike light on the back. And certainly I try not to wear all black while biking at night, especially alone. And it's a bonus to have clothes that have reflective parts to them, but I have never gone out seeking reflective gear.
Yeah, neither have I. I mean, I have my bike is bright freaking yellow, and my cargo bike, which while the back half of it is black, it is covered in battery-powered Christmas lights at night. And I have really bright generator lights, and I think lights are far more important than reflective gear ever can be. I think part of that is because I'm rarely in a car, because when I am in a car at night and I see bikers in front of me with reflective gear, I'm like, oh, wow, that actually is really visible.
Exactly. Yeah. It does work.
Yeah, yeah. But I would rather dress however I want to dress. If I want to wear black tights and a little black dress when I go out on a Saturday night, I'm not going to plan my outfit around my mode of transportation. I'm going to have really good lights built into my bike. That's how I'm going to get home. So
I do think that it's only fair to mention that I am a single woman with no children, and my style might change a little bit. Mm-hmm. Should I have children in the future?
Good call.
Because I do know that when I got a puppy, which is my baby, my views on visibility did change slightly. and not for myself, but the importance of being visible for somebody that couldn't take care of themselves and swerve when needed, etc. So I lovingly hand-sewed reflective tape onto my dog's harness.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's
so
why...
So do you put your kids in high-vis gear, John?
No. No. But their bikes have lights on them,
mm-hmm.
and I expect that other road users, you know, can see a light. And I kind of... For me, it's kind of a philosophical slash advocacy thing. I refuse to take part in sort of the arms race of protecting yourself against other road users, because I feel like that's not the road we should go down. I think, like, we should expect civility and courtesy from other people. And if we stop expecting that, then we're never going to get civility and courtesy. So, you know, I know there's definitely merits to having high-vis gear. I mean, it works. Like you said, when I'm in a car, I mean, I see a lot of people without even lights, and it just freaks me out.
That's really, yeah.
That's a whole nother thing. But, you know, the high-vis gear works, but it's sort of like, you know, I'm not going to expect that, you know, I have to sort of arm myself against the worst case scenario at all times, because that to me is not how you create a civilized cycling city. And that's what I want to have happen. So that's kind of like being the change, you know, that you want to see. Is that's why in a way I don't do that. And I refuse to kind of, you know, light up my children like road cones because of what it says about our society. And I don't want to take part in that.
This is actually something that I found interesting is that a lot of the high-vis requirements that I see that require you to wear, those are all in competitive cycling things. And I feel very comfortable, like, sure, all right, if you're a randonneur who's going to do, 500K, sure, wear a reflective vest. That is a good idea. Right. Also, because you might not be very smart if you're riding 500K. but I think that, like, designated cycling events having safety requirements is very different. One, they've got insurance right. they need to make happy, but is very different than, like, I am biking 2 miles home from the bar at 1 a.m. I want to dress to go out to the bar. I don't want to dress for that 2 mile ride at the very end of my night, you know?
So I think it's worth noting that reflective gear is actually very spendy. Right. There are companies out there who do lovely work making beautiful dresses, for example, out of completely reflective fabric. And to buy a dress like that is approximately $400, if I remember correctly. It's not cheap. Would I be happy to wear a reflective dress? Absolutely. Am I going to drop $400 for a dress? Never. Right. For a bike-specific dress.
Yeah.
Now, all that being said, the one piece of bike gear that I have and I use religiously is my bicycle. So when are we going to make the shift that the paint in bikes is reflective?
Right.
That is a really easy thing to do that I don't have to think about. It's not going to impact my daily choices and what I'm wearing. I'm already hopping on that bike. Why can't the bike itself be reflective? And they do have that technology, but again, it's cost prohibitive. So...
You know what's not cost prohibitive? Requiring generator lights and reflectors to be installed on every single bike that's sold. I mean, in Germany, every single bike that's not explicitly a road bike for racing is required to have generator lights with a certain amount of lumens. And you can't sell a bike without lights in Germany. And here you can buy a bike that doesn't come equipped with anything you need for safety on the road. Then we feel this need to arm ourselves in these other ways. We feel our need to arm ourselves with reflective gear and all of these things, rather than I bought a $150 bike. It comes with lights that I don't have to worry about the batteries for. I don't, like, they're way less likely to get stolen off my bike because they're mounted on. And I feel like our light topics, we managed to bring back to policy. but I feel like a lot of this, yeah, like you're saying, like the thing that you know bikers have is a bike. Why don't we work on that policy rather than create a bunch of rules about what you have to wear on as a cyclist?
Oh, there should never be rules created about what people should wear on a bike. Please, no.
Well, in some ways, that's one of the issues that's happening, is that some ways there are de facto rules, because all the agencies of government, every time you turn around as someone who rides, is constantly telling you and sort of demanding that you arm yourself and wear reflective clothing.
Even TriMet riders now, right. They're like, be safe, be visible when you're walking.
Right. So Lily and Megan, you guys shared some really wonderful tips earlier about your shoes and about other things that inform your choices. And you did mention wearing a skirt and a dress, but those items of clothing are sort of like difficult to wear on a bike. It's just, a lot of people would have a sort of a barrier to even wearing. I think a lot of women would be like, well, how do you do that? So Lily, you mentioned that you'd actually taught somebody how to do it. I'd be curious to know, how do you teach that? What is it?
Well, my friend April, who is very involved in the bike fun scene here and is also quite a stylish into the Lolita fashion in Japan, she had never ridden her, she rode her bike pretty religiously, but had never ridden her bike in a skirt because she thought that it wouldn't work. And despite all of this sort of common refrain of men's and women's bikes and women's bikes have the drop frame and men's bikes have a top tube, the top tube is actually really helpful if you're wearing a long skirt for holding your skirt up. It keeps your skirt out of your chain if you don't have a chain case and away from things. So you're able to kind of hike it up slightly and then sit it on that top tube. And it makes a big difference. If you're wearing a waist to floor completely fitted pencil skirt, you're not going to be able to cycle in it at all. It's going to look fabulous, but it's going to have trouble walking in it, let alone cycling in it. But most other skirts are pretty cyclable. Pencil skirts are really, I feel like, the final frontier of cycling skirts.
You just need to hike them up and wear tights underneath.
Yeah, that's the real.
So there's a few things I think people ought to know. One is, when I wear a skirt in the winter, my legs are actually quite warm. When I wear a skirt in the summer, I get a nice breeze. And when I wear a skirt and I'm trying to get myself over my man's bike top tube, it stretches with me and is therefore actually a lot easier for me to get on a bike in a skirt than it is in my tight blue jeans. So I think that it's important for people to know that it's not more difficult. In fact, it actually might be beneficial for me to be wearing a dress and biking. Also, in the wintertime when I'm biking and I have a skirt on, if my legs get wet and if it's a damp day, they dry quicker.
So much quicker.
So things to think about, because I think people always want to imagine that it is more difficult for me to bike in a skirt and heels. And in fact, I think it's easier. I'd rather be biking in a damp day wearing a dress and heels than I would ever want to be biking wearing jeans.
And from a lady perspective, I will say jeans, they've got that center seam. Mm-hmm. And that can be really uncomfortable for cycling. And I never find skirts to be uncomfortable in that way that you can imagine at home.
All of my pants have a visible wear spot where my saddle is. None of my skirts have a visible wear spot where my... None of my skirts have a visible wear spot.
I think I'm going to buy a kilt.
I know, yeah. Right? Sold. No.
Sold.
It's a good life. I will say for some of the shorter but flowier skirts, what I end up doing is wearing a petticoat because then they won't fly. The only time I've ever found this to be a problem is like Broadway Bridge wind tunnel is that I'm trying to hold my skirt down. And essentially, cute bloomers underneath can go a long way if you've got a skirt that's prone to flying up, which is not hugely problematic in my experience, or a petticoat or a crinoline can really help. I'm just partial to petticoats and crinolines in my life, but
yeah. And I would second what Lily's saying about the importance of wearing something else underneath your skirt. I used to live at the top of West Burnside, and biking down in the morning time, passing all traffic, sometimes I'd catch some good air. And my skirt would go flying up, and I'm sure it was thrilling for all of us equally. Sorry, everybody who I biked past. So what I learned then is some sort of, you know, nice shorts or skirt or tights.
Yeah.
And again, I highly recommend tights. Not, I don't wear nylons, but I wear decorative tights, and I devote 3 drawers in my bureau for them. I have a lot of tights because they're pretty necessary. They keep me modest. So that's a big tip. I also don't wear very flowy skirts because they do get caught in the rear brake. And so I've gotten holes in many a skirt, and I don't think it's very safe for me to be wearing flowy skirts.
I sit on mine.
You can sit on it.
Or you have a mid-tail or an extra cycle, and then you never have to worry about your back wheel.
Sure, yeah. When I used to ride on a tall bike, it was no problem at all. But I did find, you know, I always have my hair up with a ponytail holder, and so then I always just bring an extra hair tie, and then if my skirt does need to be pulled up, I can just kind of grab a chunk on the side and tie it up a little bit, and that way it won't go flying away. So no skirt has kept me from biking.
Yeah. No, I've had a skirt or two that's kept me from biking. Lace really loves, like, tight lace skirts are, it's never going to happen. Because lace loves saddle. All your little cables. They love to, the cables like Ooh. To find their way in. But they don't really keep me from biking. They just keep me from wearing it on my bike, and then I change wherever I'm going. Which is, you know, never the worst thing in the world. But I say that happens maybe once a year for me.
There's definitely been times when I've left the house and gotten about a block and thought, I'm pretty sure everybody can see up my skirt right now. And then I think, hold on, I should go get some tights right now. Or I'm pretty sure everybody can see up my skirt right now. I should be wearing a longer jacket or whatever the case may be. And then I'll turn around and fix it. But you normally know within a block that this skirt's going to be a problem. It's going to shimmy up too high. It's going to twist around. It's, those wrap skirts are like notorious for blowing open. Gentlemen, take note. There's a lot of things that you learn throughout the time of, you know, if I'm going to wear a wrap skirt, then I bring a bobby pin, or I'm sorry, a safety pin, and then I can pin it shut while I'm biking. Yeah. So there's just little tips that you learn, and you are going to have some miserable fails, ladies and gentlemen, who make the choice to wear a skirt while biking. You will get your skirt caught in the rear brake. You will have it tear. You will get grease on it. It will blow up. At some point, one of these things will happen to you, and you'll get over it, and that will never happen to you again.
Yeah. The roadie perspective is like the first time you wear clipless pedals on your bike, you're going to have that moment where you fall into the car next to you or the road next to you, and you'll do it once, and you'll never do it again, and it's, you know, you learn. Lesson learned.
Awesome.
We've had a show full of tips. Let's finish up with another tip, though. Megan, you've got a tip for dealing with liquid?
So my tip for this podcast is for people to bring a handkerchief with them. If you'd like, you can keep it in your pocket. I like to wrap mine around my wrist. I like decorative, kind of girly handkerchiefs. They look fantastic, and recommend cotton. It wicks away the sweat a lot better.
Lily, do you have any TriMet related tweets of the month?
I do. 41N has a fashion related TriMet tweet. Dude on Max wearing all black Chuck trailers and straight leg jeans, also killing it style wise. Dang, TriMet, you so fancy today. TriMet quotes, drunk guys arguing about what granite is made out of. T. Craig Henry, there's a guy behind me who just keeps saying Squirtle over and over again.
Squirtle?
Squirtle. Matt Steiner says, you might say I have abandonment issues, but you would too if you chased a light rail and it left without you.
Oh.
And another one from TriMet quotes, I'm done. Thanks again, TriMet, for an interesting ride home, to say the least. You never disappoint.
Nice.
Well said. That's our show.
If you're not completely overwhelmed by fashion, you can subscribe to the show at bikeportland.org/podcast and send us any comments you have at podcast@bikeportland.org.
You can spread the word about the show by searching for Bike Portland on iTunes and leaving a review.
You can follow me at Anomalily on Twitter.
And you can follow at Bike Portland on Twitter and Facebook too. I'm Jonathan Maas, Bike Portland's publisher.
I'm Michael Anderson, Bike Portland's news editor.
And I'm Megan Sinnott.
And I'm Lillian Kerbake, your podcast producer. Thanks for listening, and remember to exit through the back.
Pass on the left.
And don't forget to thank your bus driver.
Thanks, Megan.
Thank you. Around, round, going round, round, round. Down, up, down, up, down. But I gotta get around. I have only ever competed in 3 bike events, races. All 3 times I wore a dress. Twice I wore fishnets. And I won all 3 times.
Sprocket Studios production.